You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number. You can call, you can text, you can ask questions, you can suggest, you can give comments. You can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So, all right, we're going to tackle some hard subjects today. One of them is sexual abuse, childhood sexual abuse, adult sexual abuse, and what it does to the brain and how it can influence and affect who you are right now and even affect your physical body, your physical being, your physical propensity to certain illnesses, even decades after the abuse is ended. So there are things that do occur. Now, in this program, there's also going to be the counterbalance of the trauma, which is healing. Healing is available to everybody. Healing is available to everybody. When we describe what happens, when I describe what happens to the brain on this program, when someone, a child, is sexually abused, and this also goes for emotional abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, neglect, it all changes brain structure. And how our brain then sends out all the different chemicals, our ability to learn, our ability to concentrate, but not just that, like you'd think, the things that show up in personalities, but our brain's ability to churn out hormones that churn out other hormones and other signals to the thyroid and the kidneys and the stomach. So we have this constant mechanism, this fabulous machine. It's more like a independent space probe that we navigate through this planet, always in contact with all the different other layers of itself. So when you get hit on the toe, the only reason you feel it is because it's sending connections to your brain, and your brain's sending back connections just instantaneously so that you go, ow, that hurt. So this is for everything. It's for your kidneys. It's for your blood vessels. It's for the way your heart circulates. It churns out not just the fight and flight chemicals, which it does. So if you're at a heightened sense of alert, a heightened sense of awareness all the time, you're going to be in a heightened sense of fight and flight. And as you go through life, that's just your baseline. So you may not appear as if you're always in that situation. You may have dyslexia. You may have, now there's all these different reasons. As we always say, this is not a medical opinion. This is not a medical diagnosis. This is educational. Everything I tell you will be not only educational, but also it's an eclectic mixed bag. It's a tapestry of all these different areas that I've traveled in my life. And knowing you and talking with you and bringing them all together so that we can get a nice, good picture of how these inner workings go on to make us who we are, and even in the physical self, how prone we are to diabetes, how prone we are to an autoimmune disease, how prone we are to infection, how prone we are to obsessive compulsive. There's all these ways that sometimes that our abuse or traumas will actually head us in that direction. As I've said before, so many other things can as well. An infection, an intrauterine infection, a blow to the head, starvation, malnutrition, so many different things. Chemical poisoning can cause the same kind of symptoms too much mercury, just, you know, you name it. So rarely is it one cause. We do live in a, we are constantly bombarded by things that will harm us. And we house in our body right now just too many things to count that could, that can harm us. But we live in balance and harmony. That's how we're made. If we start pulling out every little tiny piece of it, we get scared. And when we get scared, that lowers our immune system. And that's exactly as we're going to be talking about sexual abuse, but that's exactly what happens every single day now, 24/7, whether it's, we turn on the television, we listen to the radio, we see, we go to our gas station, our gas pumps, and we have these pretend news shows or pretend talk shows right there at the gas pump, or we log on to Yahoo or Google and to, or AOL or whatever email source you have, and you have all kinds of the news of the day. It is not news. It is not news. It is not news. So, but it is fine-tuned and catered and tailored to you. But what is the main ingredient of all of them? Instill a little fear and then give you the remedy to quell that fear. Get, or weigh the appetites, give you a sense of lack. Oh, I really need this now. Or yes, I really am getting, you know, that, that one gray hair, or, oh gee, I really do feel bad. And then you, you kind of are in this little bubble and you reach to the closest thing that's going to help relieve the anxiety. So that's what happens. So now we get back to the idea of something very dire in our lives. Because, oh man, if I ask you now to raise your hand, have you had some kind of sexual abuse in your life that is in your head that you know of? I would have so many hands. And I'm including those of you who would raise your hand immediately and go, well, yeah, but that wasn't that bad. It was just innuendos, or it was just something my grandfather would say, or it, you know, but that is also, it changed you. It gives you a whole other pathway in your brain to go, because the complete, utter, loyal, faithful, trust person has just violated that. And then now your concept of trust no longer applies in the world, and it instills fear. And that's the first step. So we're going to look at some statistics. We're going to look at some actual things that happen to the brain. We're going to look at the very scientific. We're also going to look at the Huffington Post and other articles, just regular news articles that have been gleaned by scientific journalists. And they're going to be, so we'll package them in a kind of a bite-sized package. I also want to share with you something from the book, The Healing of Families, that Father Joseph, who wrote the book, brings up about healing and about the spiritual component of all healing. I also want to read to you a little bit and get you familiar with something on a nursing website, which is really great because it takes, it's, takes both the very clinical along with the more ethereal qualities to, here's the problem, here's what happens, but here's what can be done on a softer level as far as your own healing. So we're going to go into that too. But just right off the bat, we have in the National Center for Victims of Crime, the child. Now this is child. This is not looking at young men and women in their colleges or middle-aged people. Anyone at anywhere along the spectrum may be sexually assaulted. Anywhere. You could have been married for 20 years, had one or two relationships after a divorce, let's say, or a death of a spouse, and feel pretty good about yourself out in the world. You've raised your kids and you may be with someone that you actually like and find yourself in a situation where something has occurred that feels wrong to you, even though you're two consenting adults And there's a sexual control or a sexual taking that you did not want to give. And that happens a lot. And a lot of people, especially women, overlook that. They overlook it. They just kind of shake off their boots and, you know, go in for the next day and say, hey, how are you doing? Because everything else looks so normal on the outside. So that's a whole gamut, but it does change things inside of you. So we do have now, we're talking about kids from just the black and white. Down to the National Center for Victims of Crime. It's a website. The statistics show, show that 1 in 5 girls and it says 1 in 20 boys is a victim of sexual assault. They've since changed that. They think that it's more like 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 6 or 7 boys. It is really rapidly becoming equal across the board. And when we get to human trafficking, those statistics change just a bit because you don't have the same, I'm losing my words. Where are my words? I'll get my words on the other side of the break. I promise you. So self-reporting shows that 20% of adult females and 10%, 5 to 10% of adult males recall a childhood sexual assault. Now think about that. If 20% of all females in this country had a rash, we would be really looking hard at an epidemic. If 5 to 10% of all men in this country had a rash, we would be looking at what's causing that epidemic. And these are self-reporting now. And a lot of people will not self-report. So in my mind, I kind of double that number. All right, we come back, we will find my words and we will go further into this and to the healing aspects as well. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click friend of the show to provide your support today. Thank you.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number to text or call, and you can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So we're talking about childhood sexual abuse or any sexual abuse along the way, and it can be physical sexual abuse, mental sexual abuse, constant innuendos, constant unwanted referrals to your body, body parts, whatever. And guys, listen up. Guys, women don't want to talk about it. Women don't like to say it. I can look and I can say, and I can see so many women, I was never sexually abused. You grow up thinking you're not even sexually abused. And if you actually had a questionnaire, you would be set. You will have endured some kind of sexual abuse. You would have had some inappropriate touching, unwanted from a brother or sister, father, mother, uncle, neighbor. You will or worse. It would have been various variations on the violent scale. It may not have been very quote violent unquote, but it is something that was unwanted, inappropriate, and an assault. Something that you were not a fully willing participant in. And your brain, when you're little, at any stage, it's where you are. You are right now 100% of where you've ever been. Right now, you're as old as you've ever been, this second. Now, we all hope you're going to be a lot older. But wherever you are right now, so you've got 100% of your brain. So for you, if something occurs to you right now, it happens. And it happens in your adult full self. And when you think about it, 60 years from now, you're thinking of it, just flashes in your brain. You're not going to feel it. You may learn to get a 60 plus some year perspective on it, But chances are when it flashes in your head, you're going to be right back there. You're going to be that age. That is why someone, adult male, who I've quoted many times, very functional, very high level, very successful, family, position in a church, good looking, personable, funny, carried around this secret for so many years of his life. And that secret was a homosexual experience. And something in that conversation, which wasn't even, it was just like, it was out in public about something completely different. It was not a big, something that was really weighing on this person. Somehow it just kind of, something just came out between croissants and coffee. And it was this, oh, I'm feeling so guilty and shameful about. And then it was a homosexual experience. Well, something in the conversation just didn't, I don't know. It's not like, well, what's, and just caused me to say, well, how old were you? Person was 5 years old. How old was the person you were engaged with? An adult. So this was a crime. This was rape. This was childhood sexual abuse. It's a crime. And yet that little five-year-old kept it inside, prayed, you know, where are my angels? Where's God? But just then, you know, went on with life. And decades later, still harboring this shame that they had this homosexual experience because their particular religion was very strong against that. Not Catholic, a different religion. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're any religion. This happens. This is the norm that happens. Children go on and they put it somewhere because they don't have the tools. You did not have the tools to understand it or have any kind of perspective whatsoever. And the fear and then the guilt about liking what was going on in a weird way, but liking because in a childlike way, it's like tumbling or wrestling or getting, you know, it's that combination of somehow being tricked with play and sweetness into something that's not good or just being perpetrated upon. So we're not going to get into, you know, into specifics, but you really should talk to people about that. People who know about the entire gamut, experts, because it helps. It really helps because you can put it in a perspective from someone who sees this across the board. Start looking at good articles. You do not want to be, as I mentioned the other day to a group of people, you do not want to be in a situation where, or if you are, you want, and this happened to you, then you want to say, no, there's something wrong with that. I need to get a perspective on this. And that is this, where someone experienced sexual trauma from a family member for ongoing. And when they finally had enough courage or enough whatever, it was not courage. It's just they finally they just blurted it out. It came out. They told. They couldn't take it anymore. Nobody believed them. Everybody blamed them, the child. And then when it finally really came out, it was like, well, no, we just hide that under the table. But their spiritual person, their person in their church, the pastor, the preacher, the whatever it was, said, well, Jesus forgave people, so why can't you? And the person was like 9 years old. It's totally inappropriate. Totally inappropriate. So what happens is if you were one of those people that kind of thing happened to, or you shoved it under the table, then all you did was shove a seed further and further and further down into the ground that it couldn't grow, but you know it's there. It's like having that little thing in your shoe that you can't really find, but just one little tiny thing that's sticking into your foot. And you grow around that. Your relationships become a bit distorted. Your relationships, you don't even understand how they're becoming distorted. Your ability to know what is a danger sign and what isn't becomes muted Because remember, everything that you knew wasn't quite right was shut down in one way or another. And when a preacher or a religious person shuts it down even more, when you're little, that's a representative of God. So they're telling you, whoa, I'm not even good in the eyes of God here. So I want you to keep all that in mind as we go on to these statistics. And if you see yourself or someone else, you really can get help. People who know what they're doing in these areas, that's very important. And if you don't feel right in opening up with one, you have to feel right and open up with another. Because these are the kinds of wounds, these are the kinds of little, it's kind of like the Johnny Appleseed, you know, of disease and ill health. Are these little teeny things that were planted way a long time ago, and the person who planted them is way down the road, but they grow. So our statistics tell us that that it is ubiquitous. It's everywhere, and it's growing. It's growing exponentially. It's growing. There's neuroscience that I will tell you about, because there is a neuroscience of trauma and sexual assault. There's also lots of hope about healing. But one of the clinical characteristics of, there was a study done, and this was a long time ago, in 1997, in the Journal of American Medical Association. Clinical characteristics of women with a history of child abuse, and men, you too, but this was only studied with women. Remember, a study studies a particular population, particular age group, and they have to weigh for a lot of different variables. But basically, the purpose of this journal article, this study, was to determine the prevalence of childhood physical or sexual abuse in women seen in primary care, to identify physical and psychological problems associated with that abuse, and to compare the effects with the people who have had childhood physical versus sexual abuse and childhood versus adult abuse. So it's kind of a looking at these different parameters here. So they did a cross-sectional study. They self-administered. It was anonymous. And again, a lot of times people don't even remember. They don't want to, or they don't know how to fill out some of these things 100% honestly. But we take that in consideration. So here's what they found. The results. They studied almost 2,000 people. 1,931 respondents. So that's how many people responded to the people that they asked. 424, those 22%, reported childhood or adolescent physical or sexual abuse. Compared with women who reported never having experienced abuse, women who reported abuse as children but not as adults had more physical symptoms and had higher scores for depression, anxiety, somatization, which I'll tell you about on the other side of the break, and interpersonal sensitivity, low self-esteem, were more likely to be abusing drugs, more likely to have a history of alcohol abuse, and more likely to have attempted suicide, more likely to have a psychiatric admission, and women abused only as children did not differ from women who reported current but not childhood abuse in number of physical symptoms, emotional distress, substance abuse, or suicide attempts. Patients who report both childhood and adult abuse had higher levels of psychological problems and physical symptoms than those that had only childhood or only adult abuse. So the conclusion, if we have a second, we don't have a second. I will give you the conclusion on the other side of the break, and that will lead us into looking at the effects, the neuroscience, the hope, what we can do, and the healing. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me DM live at breadboxmedia.com. Questions, comments, concerns, experiences, all this, these are opening. We open up the windows. We open up the doors. We ask questions. We connect dots that not everybody else connects. And when you get those little nudgings, you may get some help. You may get some thoughts, some reawakenings. And so sometimes that's your cue that this may be the time or the beginning of the time to explore things that maybe once were hidden. And it is not a bad thing. Oftentimes we go, oh my gosh, I do it. You know, I'd much rather have my head in the sand than because it was quite comfortable, thank you. And I don't want to have to look at this now. It's already gone, buried, been, will go away. And forgiveness is a whole other issue. Because then we have to look at forgiveness versus non-forgiveness. We will not do that today. But forgiveness is a big old sticky issue. It should be very simple, but it is not. But one thing to drive home, forgiveness does not mean forgetting, and it does not mean reconciling. So forgiveness does not mean forgetting, and it does not mean reconciling. It means forgiveness. If you can't forgive, just admit that to yourself. Because that's something that you will be needed because it's your own healing too. It will be your own medicine. But you can't pretend you forgive if you don't. And maybe there are layers of forgiveness where you think, okay, yeah, I've done it. And then something triggers you and it's like you're back with all the anger and unforgiveness. So it's not like you undo the forgiveness you had, but your emotions are tied into it and the emotions aren't going to go away because some of these things are pretty horrific. Some of these things should never have been. Some of the things rob people for decades of their lives. And you hear all the time of people who have been robbed in that manner, and yet they do forgive. But forgiveness does not mean reconciliation. It does not mean don't protect either, because there's a good chance that a perpetrator, in fact, I hear more often of perpetrators who are sexually assaultive to children, they don't stop. Even if they're outed, they don't stop. So people who listening to a radio thing yesterday and while I'm driving, someone was calling in. They had been a victim of sexual, or their, I think their spouse had been a victim of sexual abuse as a child by a in-law. And was pretty much told to keep everything quiet. The in-law was since divorced and gone. That particular person remarried, and the person they remarried began doing the same thing to their own, this person's relative, niece, nephew. So in other words, this cycle, the blind spots continue to be the blind spots. The predators continue to be able to have a welcome mat without knowing it. You don't mean to do it. So that's why it's very important to stop these things if you can, and also to begin working on yourself so that you can help not only keep your door closed to predators, but you can also help those in your family, those in your friends, those around you when the red flags are there. So this is a really ubiquitous, very big thing. So we're talking about and I do want to get into the neuroscience of it because it's really, it'll help put a perspective on why certain things seem to happen to you. But before I do that, let's take a quick look. Let's go just put on the brakes, take that steering wheel and take a quick left turn. This is relevant, but it is a very different viewpoint. It's from the book, The Healing of Families, from Father Joseph, but his actual name is Father Yosefu, and I cannot, Balakudembe Samakula, or Father Joseph. He's from Uganda, and he wrote the book, The Healing of Families. It's a very good book. But in his very first chapter, which is almost an intro, it is an intro chapter, Human Healing and the Human Spirit. And he says, when he talks about, and he says this, and we recall also that incident when the disciple asked Jesus, who sinned for this man to be born blind, him or his parents? And the Lord answers, neither. But this is so that the glory of God may be seen. And then Father goes on to say, what do we get a glimpse of here? We begin to perceive that there is a whole spiritual dimension to sickness and healing. It is not simply a question of the human body, read human machine, getting sick and getting a physician, read mechanic, to fix it. There is a spiritual dimension to sickness and disease, and human persons are never completely healed if their spiritual life does not come into consideration when treating the physical problem. This we understand from the way the God who made us handles sickness sometimes, and his way is final and definitive. And yet how many people today, including Christians who know the gospel, never think the sickness may have a spiritual dimension to it. And then he goes on to say that psychology and psychological sciences improved it a bit in trying to treat the whole body. They added a spiritual touch to it that ordinary medicine cannot quite capture. They were once more conscious of the mystery of the human being. However, soon loopholes appeared even in this blossoming human science. So basically, he is not saying that God, now do not think that God makes these things happen. God does not make these things happen. God does not decide that little child's going to have a perpetrator in their pathway. When the perpetrator in this predatorial world comes across your path and it happens, just like breaking an ankle happens, and it scars you and it hurts you and it changes your developing brain, there's still a spiritual component in that. And so decades later, and not that God did that, God did not do that, but that at that moment, there is also more to it than just what your brain is going to do and the trauma that was inflicted. And we see that all the time by survivors. Survivors telling their stories. Survivors decades later, broken lives later, writing books about it to help other people so they don't feel so alone in isolation. It doesn't change what happened to them. It doesn't change the fears that they have or the mistrust they have. But what it does, it starts to give them a new open door to rebuild certain kinds of trust and change our malleable forming bodies. So when we talk about some of the actual things that can happen from childhood sexual abuse, in American Nurse Today, which is the official journal of the American Nursing Association, there's an article that was written in 2012, Long-Term Health Outcomes of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And they go on to talk about that psychological consequences of trauma. They talk about the fact that we first began becoming aware of that. So this stuff, even though it's been with us from day one, we didn't really start looking at it as a psychological trauma until way back during war times, veterans of war with shell shock. And then in 1980, it's not till 1980, 1980, that's a lot of years after Christ, that it was recognized as an actual diagnosis that could be treated and reimbursed for. So they've been studying it now for a while, but it's still pretty young, isn't it? So they talked about the fight or flight response in the early 1900s, able to kind of take a look on what really happened. So then they asked the question, when trauma and stress happen in early life, what effects does it have? So what they're realizing now is they get to know more about genetics, about imaging of the brain, that there are far more profound and long-lasting biological, developmental problems that affect the brain, especially when it happens early in life, because you have such a new forming brain. There is, there's genetics enter into it, nutrition, social interaction, But what they say is that at least the thinking in 2012 is that there are no new brain neurons formed after birth. However, a constant rewiring of existing neurons. Remember how I told you about that connection before? That we have a lot of we have billions of neurons, but it's about what connections. And in fact, you're as a normal human being, you're going to actually have some of those neurons just die away because they're not needed. You have more than you need, and then your brain starts to get wired, and then some of them just kind of fall away. But there are things that happen, places in the brain that are responsible for these certain closed circuit loops. And the growth or shrinkage of those areas can keep you locked into this loop. So healing is possible. But why don't we're going to look at a little of the biological changes when we come back from the break, just in the rest of your body, that can be influenced by this too, just to give you a flavor of what might explain part of why you might be feeling something decades later, and your trauma from early childhood may be influencing, and how you can heal from it. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me today, Dr. Michelle Live. We're talking about sexual abuse, childhood sexual abuse, adult sexual abuse. We're talking about the long-lasting effects, but the potential for healing, and not just potential for healing, but the mandate. We can heal. Do not let anyone rob you of the right to heal. Really? That's one thing. It's a little bit of a little nuance here. When we raise our hands and say, hi, I am John Smith. And John, if you're out there and you're listening, I don't mean you. I'm making the name up. John, hi, I am John Smith. And I am an alcoholic. I am a survivor of sexual abuse. I am a meth addict. I am a codependent person. I am a, that is why early on, in the early days of AIDS, when my brother had AIDS, early days of AIDS, when they died very quickly, they immediately started saying, wait a minute, we don't like being called AIDS patients. We're persons with AIDS. They were young. They were vibrant. They were smart. They were not so smart. They were people. But no one knew what was happening, and everyone treated them like lepers. And pretty soon they were under a microscope, and they were wanted for their blood to look and see, what is this horrible new disease? But there was a thing, some people kind of rolled their eyes at that. But then really, that was wisdom. I'm a person with AIDS. I'm a person with cancer. I'm a person with alcoholism. Now, it may seem like just semantics, and it is, but it is powerful. It's powerful because you can heal. When Father Joseph talks about that spiritual dimension, he's saying, yeah, we got bodies. Think machine. We have mechanics. Think physicians. Now, again, those physicians are fully functioning human beings with the spiritual component as well. But the added touch, the added spiritual component, the God element in the human person is the element that heals. And it's not about right and wrong. It's not about that, oh, well, you're just not doing it right. But it's about fully opening in your chest area to the transfigured God inside of you, to let that, we're going to talk about that another time because I wanted to get back. This is our last segment. But it's very powerful stuff, and it's hard to get into one program. But so in America Nurse Today, and I like that because it's just a darn official journal of a segment of our medical society, and they're they take the best of the medical journals and the medical articles, and they have to put it with the ethereal, because they're kind of like in the in-between zone there. So when they talk about, here we go. So I'm going to get back to this. Trauma and early negative experiences affect the development and even structure of the brain. Women who were sexually abused as children show significantly diminished brain volume on brain scans. The structure and function of the hippocampus, which is responsible for learning and memory, for example, are different when compared to individuals who weren't traumatized. The medial prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, and other neural circuitry of the brain are also changed. The brain shows a sustained and pervasive stress response as the child grows, and this has a long-term effect on immune function. Brainwave patterns change. The brain's response to inflammation and healing is altered. Neurotransmitter levels adapt to these new abnormal levels, and the biological changes in the brain are even more profound if the abuse was early, pervasive, or severe. Now, here are some of the long-term health issues, because I have comments on those, and we can't end without those comments, because that may be all true, but do not let that be a freak out for you or a fear nugget for you, because with so many women and men, huge proportions being sexually assaulted at some time in their life, brilliant, brilliant women, brilliant artists, brilliant musicians, brilliant computer scientists have been sexually abused. So just because we see these areas shrink and there's attention problems and this and that, the brain is enormous. It is a universe. And it has all it's going to need and more. So it's a matter of then taking the tracks like on a train and going and derailing one, disconnecting it from one area, and let the other area flourish and grow. So trauma, there's that, and that's where all of it comes in, the spirituality too. There aren't too many creative people who didn't have trauma in their life in some way, shape, or form. And some of them that are brilliant, that passion that comes out of that trauma, I've heard musicians that just make you want to go down to your knees. Come down to your face on the ground, because they are so passionate, and they're not playing anything, you know, that you haven't heard before. They might be playing Bach, Beethoven, Pachelbel, somebody, but Vivaldi, but that passion comes out. So don't let this be a scared thing. It is not. Now, long-term health issues for survivors. I want you to hear this now, because a lot of people don't get the connection, but it's true. The range of potential adverse health outcomes is extensive, and childhood sexual abuse can be seen as a risk factor for many diseases. Those who experience childhood sexual abuse are 1.5 times more likely to report serious health problems. The figure below shows common long-term sequelae of childhood sexual abuse. Because of the holistic nature, it's difficult to categorize the conditions into traditional systems of paradigms. So remember, we're seeing the connection, but we can't put it in boxes. So therefore, we oftentimes get, I hope I have enough time. All right, so here's one. Just the psychological we know about: anxiety, poor self-esteem, dysfunctional relationships, eating disorders, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, intense fear, horror, helplessness, maladaptive coping, denial. Those with a history of childhood sexual abuse have increased reports of fear, anxiety, insomnia, headaches, aggression, anger, hostility, poor self-esteem, and suicide attempts, higher rates of depression. They also see increased cytokines, which is the inflammation response, and cortisol, which is inflammation, which is a stress response. They've been identified as mechanisms by which immune system function is impaired and related to depression. Incidences of dysfunctional relationships, intimate partner violence, and self-destructive behavior are higher. Higher rates of physical diseases, such as sexually transmitted diseases, hepatitis, pelvic inflammatory diseases, can be attributed to the common behavioral issues for this population, including promiscuity, substance abuse, and or sexual dysfunction. But, now listen to this, but for those traumatized early in life, there exists a clear and increased risk of lung disease, ulcers, cardiac disease, diabetes, cardiac disorders, a high incidence of inflammatory disorders such as rheumatoid arthritis and allergies, an example of an imbalanced immune system overreaction, rheumatoid arthritis and allergies, asthma. Prolonged stress and exposure to cortisol, for instance, cause wounds to heal slowly, indicating an underreacting immune system. So autoimmune diseases also happen from early childhood sexual abuse, men and women. Some of the strongest evidence linking autoimmune disease to children, childhood trauma, is a retrospective study of over, now listen people, 15,000 adults who were enrolled in the Adverse Childhood Experience Study. Autoimmune disease processes commonly seen in these people who had early childhood trauma, fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel, type 1 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, people with sexual history of childhood sexual abuse, fibromyalgia. They use a lot of outpatient surgeries and a lot of over-the-counter analgesics like ibuprofen. Adult survivors of sexual abuse are also reported in childhood abuse to increase pain associated with cardiovascular diseases, atherosclerosis, ischemic heart disease, maladaptive immune function, and inflammation occur in higher rates in adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse than those who were not abused as children. Now, healing is possible at any point in life. They're telling this to nurses so that the nurses can approach their patients with a holistic viewpoint. Nurses should be familiar with local providers for counseling, stress management training, and holistic care. They should take an active role in advocating for the client in referral process when the history comes up, so that when you just go, you don't just tick off the box. Yeah, I was abused, but I'm over that now. What they're saying is that may be gone, but your fibromyalgia today, or your rheumatoid arthritis, or your asthma. How many of you have asthma? How many of your children have asthma? It can be, yes, it's from a pollen, but it's a hyperactive immune system that causes the reaction. It may not be from all this. It could be from all of many different things, but I want that awareness in you. We only have one more minute, so I want to do this. I want to go more into the actual neuroscience tomorrow, the psychological situation that goes up, but today an overview to say, yes, those traumas of the past, men, women, boys, girls, they affect your physical, mental well-being today, decades later. And we don't dive necessarily and play in the past, but it is important to recognize the cause, a wound, and the seed of that wound, so you can get it out and get it healed, because we are hardwired to heal. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You may email me at any time, DM live, breadboxmedia.com. We will see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.